It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I don't know. I don't know.
That's why we have to turn on the recording even during the part in between, because we have some very interesting conversations. Although, to be fair, and I'm the one who kind of started that one, and I don't know that I would have on the air. That's one that I would have been like, that's a little too personal for William to talk about. I'm at that point now, because you, much more private person than I am, in a lot of ways, this show brings out a tendency to open up.
Yeah.
In both of us.
Sure.
In me, it's harder to notice because there was very little shit I wasn't already just yelling out to the world. But in your case, it's more noticeable. And I think, you've not told me this, well, maybe once, there are times where, in retrospect, you're like, whoa, I didn't really mean to say as much of that personal stuff as I did.
Yeah, there are times.
And so I am now at a point, because we've been doing this for so many years, shit, seriously, a lot of years, there are things where I'm like, this feels like a topic that William will be open and honest about on the podcast, and then later maybe regret that he was. So maybe, I mean, if it's one that I'm like, this sounds like something William's going to be too embarrassed about and we'll never talk about, then I just jam it home, because that's hilarious. But if it's one that I'm like, he may actually open up and then later be like, oh, kind of wish I had not done that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I just leave it.
I mean, in the last...
This is for those of you who think I don't have a heart.
For the last 6 years, we've done 333 of these, and maybe...
This is 334, I know.
Maybe I've regretted...
I shouldn't have spoiled that.
Maybe I've regretted, like, something I said for a... And not even for the whole podcast, but just for, like, a moment in maybe six of them.
Yeah, I want to say there have been, like, one or two times that you actually told me that, and then a couple others where you've told me that you did not expect to say that much, but you didn't say whether or not that was a good thing. And honestly, I think sometimes this place is good for you for that.
Yeah, probably.
I think it can be good for you to... Well, and I have this too. If you're articulating something out loud, sometimes it further explains it in your own head.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is part of why I'm constantly telling everybody everything, because I'm like, somebody's going to figure it out for me.
Yeah.
So, hello everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's like therapy but free, but really bad therapy, but free. That's what it says on our signs. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And as you already said,
this is episode 334. It is the second part of a duology that we have. I always love that.
So if you want to know how it works, you have to go back to 333.
You ever read a book series that they call a duology?
Yes.
I'm like, come on. You don't know. Come on. Really?
I guess that's just the signal. We're not writing anymore, guys.
But it's like, you can just have a book. And I don't think you get to call it a series if there's two.
I don't know. I don't know.
Such books. But then they do it. Yeah, the award-winning duology. Anyway. So, yeah. If you want to know how the show works and you don't know how the show works, it's weird. But also, go back to the last episode and it'll explain it there.
Yeah, you don't even have to listen to the whole thing. Do listen to the whole thing, but...
I feel like that would help.
But we pretty much explain it in the first 5 minutes or so.
Okay, we have to start here with the fact that I made you watch the trailer for A Ghost Story.
Yeah, it looked good.
For this. It looks very interesting. And I See, here's the problem. I love movie trailers at this point, but I also am so painfully aware that you can make a trailer say anything that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with your actual movie.
Right.
Like, it's so... Making good trailers is a separate skill set, and no part of it involves the relative quality of the film.
That's right.
And that being said, this is a trailer that doesn't tell you a lot about what the film's about.
Right.
But it's definitely strongly implying a story to me. And that story is of a ghost that is hanging out in the same place over what appears to be centuries. And their existence there. And with a pretty heavy focus in the middle on this one family that lives there, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
And that story sounds awesome.
Yeah, it does.
And even if that's not the story, it's one of the visuals look really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the one I want to make a point about. The music, which also frequently music has nothing to do with that movie if it's in the trailer. Like, there are a lot of songs in trailers that I'm like, oh, that's not in the movie. No. In fact, I remember when I was a young kid, this hit me the first time. I watched a trailer for a movie called School Ties. Had, like, Brendan Fraser and Will Wheaton, and I don't know. It was like if Porky's was a tragedy, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
Something like that. It was a sad movie about kids and anti-Semitism, and I don't know. But in the trailers, they use this song that made it very dramatic and kind of intense. And I was very confused because the song was an original composition that had been written as part of the soundtrack of the movie Come See the Paradise, which was one of my favorite movies at that point.
Right.
And I was like, this can't be in this movie. It's literally from the soundtrack of a different movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't in that movie. Because since that particular song has been used in many trailers since. It's one of the many that, like, evokes a certain...
Oh, yeah, I hear pieces from Edward Scissorhands in a lot of movie trailers.
But the cool thing now, living in the age we're living in, you're like, that's awesome. And then I even just do this with commercials. And then you go to Google, and you're like, such and such commercial, such and such trailer, song. And you find out what it is. And you grab the music off iTunes or whatever.
Because sometimes it's good.
And sometimes you discover a whole new artist.
Yeah.
And so, the music in this trailer, awesome, grab it. Find out, it's written for this movie.
Oh.
As part of an original soundtrack for this movie. And the whole soundtrack is already on Apple Music, so I grabbed it.
Cool.
And it looks like, actually, that song specifically, like, the soundtrack is written by one guy, but I think the way it's credited, that song may have been written by a group that exists outside of this movie.
Mm.
That they got to do this one song. But yeah, so that's kind of cool. Alright. How is your week?
I don't know. It'll probably be good.
I'll be at Virginia Beach.
It seems like there's something I'm doing, but I don't remember now. You know, the state fair is coming up. And it's also sweet corn season. Have you been eating any sweet corn?
A little bit. 2-3 meals.
So maybe that'll be going on in the next week. Not the fair, but the sweet corn.
Yeah.
The fair is the week after.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be in Virginia Beach hanging out with the family. How much for that? This month is my mother-in-law's 70th. And so my wife and her siblings are putting together a thing while it will have just happened, I think, yesterday.
Oh.
Where they're doing a sort of surprise party that's barbershop themed with red and white striped napkins and rainbow cupcakes with little toothpicks you stick in there, these big mustaches, and like plates that have mustaches on them, and lots of barbershop looking things. I think hats for the little kids. And my wife hired an actual barbershop quartet to come and serenade her.
And why is it themed this way? Because she likes barbershop quartets?
She likes barbershop, yeah. She likes this kind of thing.
Hmm.
So, that should be cool.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Okay, I have something I would talk about, and this is kind of serious. But, well, but also not. But, anyway, before that, I just remembered something, and I wanted to talk about this. A tequila commercial.
Okay.
I saw it right before we were recording.
Okay.
I had not seen it before. It's a pretty cool-looking commercial.
Okay.
A little scene plays out, and that prominently features Cuervo. It was Cuervo tequila. And then at the end, you get a shot of the tequila and the tagline, which is, "Tomorrow is overrated." And so, you know, live for tonight kind of thing.
Mm.
Which I understand. Especially with tequila. That's all you're doing. If you drink tequila, you're living for now. But here's where it gets weird. I have to think, was this commercial designed specifically for the political climate we are in now? Not just because of the slogan, "Tomorrow is overrated," which a lot of us currently feel, but because the actual commercial is basically a man and a woman lock eyes across an empty bar and go over to each other and without a word start dancing a tango while the literal apocalypse happens around them. So, "Tomorrow is overrated" ceases to become about seize the day and more about,
hey, we're all just
fucked, yep, anyway.
Might as well.
Have a good time.
Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
And I am intrigued and horrified, yes, at this idea, yes, at the same time. And I had to cough there. Sorry. See, this is what happens when you do two in a row. I haven't wet my whistle in between, so I'll start sounding like Tom Waits here in a minute.
Tom Waits.
I should be so lucky. All right. Here's the thing I need to talk about. It's been happening this last week. It sounds funny. It's kind of funny. But I mean it. Serious. I'm really sick of white guys.
And this is happening just this week?
It's really kicking in this week.
Oh, okay.
Like, really hard. Like, I'm listening to music. I'm listening to the Comedy Central channel a lot. And there's all sorts of stuff on there. So many of it are straight white guys saying shit that's just pissing me off. And in some cases, shit that didn't piss me off like a year or two ago. Same act. But it's just all driving me crazy. And I'm just tired. I finally had to tweet about this idea. Like, there is a definite set of comedians and comedic writers out there in the world that very strongly believes that comedy is sacred, in that nothing is off limits. I am a person who believes this as a general concept. I believe in that thing where people should be like, I am offended by something, which is not the same thing as to say something is offensive.
Okay.
Because offensiveness is a very subjective thing.
Right.
And so I feel that people should be able to make jokes about stuff, whatever they want, and if you are offended by the kinds of jokes they make, you should vote with your feet and with your wallet.
Right. I agree.
And so with these comedians, I agree on that principle. I tend to hate them. And I just recently, and everybody's going to be like, duh, but I just recently realized every comedian for whom that's their thing is a straight white male. Every single one.
Hmm. Well, my wife and I, when we're looking through Netflix or we're doing whatever, looking for a show to watch, if something looks like it's too heavy with white men, we're just not interested, because there is a white male, and I should probably say white male heterosexual narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't want to think there is,
mm-hmm,
but that's only because they feel like that's the default narrative,
yep,
right? So everybody likes that narrative,
mm-hmm,
but no, it is its own narrative, just like any other culture might have their own narrative, and it has certain qualities that do not resonate with me. In spite of the fact that I'm also a straight white male, but they don't resonate with me or my wife or us together while we're watching a film. And we're bored with stories, mm-hmm, about straight white men, because they are all the same.
Yeah.
There's a definite cultural milieu to whatever the story is, and it's the same every single time. Mm-hmm. And again, a lot of people think there isn't. A lot of people think, well, this is just a story. It doesn't matter that they're straight white men. Oh, yes, it does matter.
Yeah.
And it does affect how the story is told. And it's boring.
And a few years ago,
to me anyway,
I would have agreed with this, what you just said. And I would have said, I mean, I still can enjoy things like that. But I recognize that. But now, I'm starting to get tired of it.
Yeah, I'm very tired
of it. And the other problem, of course, is people like you and me. This is a podcast of two white guys talking about it.
Yeah.
Again, talking about this thing. Which brought me to another conundrum I was thinking about. Because I'm like, there's some value in that. I mean, I've been working really hard on not ever speaking for the female experience when I talk about feminism.
Yeah.
Because that's a thing people can have a tendency to do.
What do we know?
And exactly. To the degree that whenever possible now, I'll be like, if somebody else could speak instead who's, you know, a woman, that would be awesome. Or a person of color, as that thing comes up.
Right, right.
But I realized there is definitely a power in being a straight white male who just says, who mentions that they're feminist as part of just like sure. in their dating profile or whatever like that, and doesn't say like I'm sympathetic to feminism or I, you know, I love feminism. No, I am a feminist.
Right.
Straightforward. I'm not a man feminist or a manifest. I'm not a man. none of that. It's just the feminist because that's the thing. It's about a certain perspective and a certain belief, and I have that.
Yeah. Right.
But. Yeah, I'm just getting tired of hearing. Sorry, that is not where I was going. I've realized I'm in the shittiest position for this because I had this idea. I'm like, I still could be like, I am a straight white male. Here's my experience. I'm not speaking to women's experiences, but here are my thoughts on it. For all those guys who think, you know, oh no, it's just, you know, the women or whatever. But I realized I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't because I'm not a straight white male. I am a bisexual white transgendered individual by my own self-identification, but I self-identify as transgender but have not transitioned in the slightest and don't intend to and live entirely as my birth sex in society, and I'm bisexual but I've never actually been in a relationship with men and I am happily married to a woman. So what this means is that if I try and speak out from the perspective of bisexual transgendered individual, other bisexual and transgendered individuals are going to look at me and say, yeah, no, you're just a straight white guy, and you don't know our experience. And they're not wrong, because I don't know their experience, because I've been able to live in society as a straight white guy. But actual straight white guys, I'm now figuring out I'm legitimately what they're scared of. I am what they are afraid all men will turn into if feminism really kicks into gear. I care nothing about my masculinity. I am not worried about being considered gay. Like, I don't do manly stuff. I don't think women are different. I am the pussified libtard male that all these people like to talk about.
Well, I think the point that bears...
And proud of it, for the record.
I think the point that bears mentioning here is we're... you know, we're cisgendered male and we're white. Those things can't be denied. But I don't think either one of us, even me, who is a heterosexual person, I don't think either one of us are heteronormative.
No.
I mean, I've never fit in. I've had a few male friends, you and a few others, where I felt comfortable with them as person to person. But if I ever meet a man and it's clear to me that we can't relate person to person, but that we somehow have to relate man to man,
mm-hmm.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to do it.
Yeah. And this is what I run into. And here's the thing. Like, I don't want to say I don't blame them, but you don't have to be... I have a lot of traits that people who very strongly believe in the gender divide would consider feminine. I have a lot of feminine aspects. I don't like sports. I don't think, you know, guy stuff is really cool, the outdoors and being manly and all that stuff. I do a lot of women's stuff that I think is like I don't fit the male gender stereotype in a lot of ways. I don't believe you have to have all those other traits to be a feminist and to be opposed to racism.
No, that's right.
But I am essentially I am the stereotype. I'm literally living the stereotype, and that is, I do believe, something of a coincidence.
Mm.
But it makes it difficult if I want to stand up and be like, hey, it's sort of like, well, I don't know, back in the day, like, people would be like, you're not, if you are a, to quote Patrick Stewart from the movie Jeffrey, a limp-wristed screaming queen, you have a right to be, but you're not really helping the cause in like the 60s and 70s if you become a public figure for that or you speak out about it, because that's what all the guys are afraid of, is that they'll turn into that.
Oh, well, yeah, and in the 70s female feminists didn't want lesbians really being vocal in their movement.
Man-hating lesbian kind of thing and all that kind of
They called
stuff.
Them the Lavender Menace. And they didn't want
that
scared people away, and they didn't want them having anything to do
and
with
it. And is handled poorly.
I mean, I should like, say some feminists did, not all feminists.
You don't want to exclude, but it's also not a lie that a manlier type of man with the same message would probably have more impact on men who are not committed feminists than I would.
I suppose.
But it doesn't mean that my experience is invalid.
No, that's right.
My experience gets kind of niche, and in my desires to not speak outside of my experience, I can alienate people if we don't have common experience.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, this is the kind of shit I've been dealing with lately, badly in my head. I am suddenly, this sounds super weird, and this is, I mean this as a joke, but I am suddenly getting extra woke like I wasn't before. And just so many things. I mean, I thought, I was like, oh no, it's institutional racism, institutional sexism, I get it. And now it's like, wow, it's more everywhere than I remember. And somehow, even though I hated it before, it's bugging me even more now. And then today, I found something to save me.
What's that?
Apple Tunes. Apple Music. Sorry, not Apple Tunes.
What does Apple Tunes save you? Let's call it that.
Apple Tunes.
Why shouldn't we call it that?
But it doesn't Apple taste Tunes. Like apples. sorry, it doesn't sound like apples. That's totally this episode.
Apple Tunes.
So Apple Tunes, I've been I use the Apple Tunes and I love it. You know, I pay $10 a month and then I just have all the music in the world.
Okay.
I
didn't know it worked like that.
Yeah, it's a subscription service and you just grab whatever you want and I can download it to this and I'm paying $10 a month. Now if I ever stop paying, I gotta give it all back. So I don't own any of it.
Oh.
But as long as I'm still paying, I just got it forever, and I can switch it out. And so I'm trying to really make use of this, and I'm trying to do what I've tried to do in the past and not been successful, build some playlists for certain moods.
Hmm.
Like, this is when I need to get pumped up, this is when I need to chill out, you know, that kind of stuff. This is the stuff that makes me want to dance, this is the stuff that makes me cry, you know, those kind of things. And I'm thinking, during the week that just happened, that for us is about to happen, in Virginia, I'm going to spend time doing that with this. But I've been thinking in my head recently of things I had back on my old iPod or things I listened to in the past. What do I think I might want that I put in there? And I look them up and see if they're there, and they're almost always there. But there is one that eluded me before, and I think I checked back on iTunes, which is technically a different catalog than Apple Tunes. I feel like it's spelled T-O-O-N-S. Is that just me?
No, all right, I love it.
I think that's
it. I love it.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, it's a slightly different. So I suddenly remember to look for it, and they have Liz Phair, and they have old Liz Phair. And for those of you who don't know Liz Phair, like apparently William, because he's staring at me.
I don't think I know.
Like someone
I
just
might
hit
know.
Him really hard
I'm
in
waiting,
the back of the
I'm
head.
I'm waiting for
something.
You to continue so that I might know
Liz Phair. Now I'm not a diehard fan or anything, so I only started to know, but Liz Phair. This young woman who started making music that's like, imagine that like you were a punk rock musician and then died and then was reborn as a singer-songwriter, but like the soul of the punk rock person was still in there. That's what her shit is.
Okay.
It's a lot of like single woman guitar things, just really and unbridled feminist. Maybe not even like intentionally, just very much talking about her personal and traumatic experience. And just like really raw and stuff. Amazing stuff. And I got into it, especially the her first album, which is called Exiled in Guyville, in college, when I was so ready for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I found out they have it, and I listened to it today while I was doing work, and in my head, I'm like, yeah, I was into this, and I can think of two or three songs that I really like. No, apparently I burned this fucker into my brain, because it's got 18 tracks, and every single one, I'm like, oh, I remember this.
Uh-huh.
And it's just angry, and this is the thing. My pissed off feminist jacket is just fitting better every day. I'm just really mad at the patriarchy right now.
Yeah.
And this was just like this was the sermon I needed to hear. It's also, I just like it, but it was the perfect time. I was like, oh my god. I was texting people that I knew, and so few people like remember she was a thing. Cause, well, here's the thing. So she did all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sort of disappeared for 5-10 years or whatever. And then she came back, but as a straight-up pop star.
Hmm.
And it was very confusing and scary and sad and disappointing. But to be fair, I didn't listen to a lot of stuff. I listened to the singles that were released originally, and I was like, this doesn't sound like Liz Phair. I'm out of here. So, but, oh, it's been a balm to my soul. I've been texting folks, and I find out friends who know it, and I'm like, yeah, I needed this so bad. They're like, yeah, I'm going to look that up too.
Like, that's good.
So, that's been... I'm tired of white men right now.
I don't blame you.
Saved by Appatoons.
Appatoons. T-O-O-N-S. Z. No.
No,
S.
No, no. Z's a little bit. Appatoons.
That's too far.
It's more wholesome. It's the Z.
Yeah, it makes it seem edgy.
The Z starts getting shenanigans-y, which is not spelled with a Z, I understand, but I feel that vibe.
I got you.
Is shenanigans... almost back as just a word again.
Again, I think that,
because like it's an old timey word, right? That was like a real thing.
It sort of got reintroduced to the popular lexicon through Juno.
Okay, see, and I always thought South Park, because South Park also did that. Huh. But it was always a joke. Like it's always funny when you say,
yeah,
it.
Like,
but I'm like
old timey.
But we're almost there. I almost feel like it's just a thing.
It is just a thing
you use now.
Yeah, it used to be ironic. You'd say ironically, like
nobody,
an old person.
You can
say
shenanigans, and nobody like grins necessarily.
No, they don't realize
like a real.
Yeah, it's
kind of like How I Roll. How I Roll snuck in there like that too.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, no, trust me. The day I figured that out, I think I've talked about it before. The day I realized I had just said How I Roll unironically was a dark. I was like, holy shit, what is wrong with me?
No, I think shenanigans is no longer ironic. It's a thing now. That's why I
look that up, because I feel like a shenanigan is a specific kind. It's not the same as a prank or con
skullduggery
or a shenanigan.
Very specific.
Yes. But I don't know. I need to look that up. Remind me to look that up later.
You might be right.
But yeah, when you put a Z on the end instead of an S like that, I feel it feels shenanigan-y.
All right. Appatoons.
Appatoons. That's up there with Bat Monday. With just random phrases. How is it that it's a staple of our show that a random few syllables all say in a weird voice, and we both find it so funny that it becomes the title of an episode?
I don't know.
And then a thing we keep saying and giggling about for the next, like, four, because that's usually how
I
that
I don't
works.
Know how that... Why
how is that... That's like a feature of our show. That's not right.
But just a place where our humor intersects, I
exactly.
guess.
Exactly. Funny voices. That is sort of... That is sort of the spot, I
yeah,
feel like.
Yeah,
that's.
Yeah.
Oh! This brings up... Before we get to this... How have you been following the Kermit the Frog trials and tribulations?
A little bit.
How is that? This is weird to say, but you're closer to Kermit the Frog than any of my other friends.
Well, as you know, as I was growing up, you know, while everybody else's heroes were baseball players or new movie stars, my heroes were
Frogs made out of felt.
Mel Blanc and Jim Henson.
Also them.
And I was... Jim Henson's death was probably the first celebrity death I can remember that like, affected me. And for...
That might be true for me, too.
For what...
Because it was definitely a thing.
I went to Disney World a couple times where they had... I don't know. They don't have it anymore, I don't think. They just got rid of it for something else. But they had a Muppet Theater there, and you could go in, you could watch this 3D Muppet thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it was... Jim Henson did all of it before he passed away. And I've only seen it twice, but both times were after he passed away, and I... And it's just a show. It's just a regular Muppet thing in 3D.
Yeah.
And I would tear up every time. Because, I mean, that's just how I felt about Jim Henson and his work. And also, the reason I'm saying all that is not just to give people an understanding of how much I care about Jim Henson and what he did, and Frank Oz, too. But to explain why I'm one of those people that was of the opinion that after he passed away, the characters that he voiced should not keep going. Not because I thought it was disrespectful to him or anything else like that. Naturally, I wanted to see those characters continue, but the problem was I just didn't think anybody could do it, and every single time I saw someone attempt to do it, I was only proven right. Nobody could do it. I never did like any performance of Kermit after his. I thought that it was always a little off. And you know, I expected there's going to be a whole generation of people who think of Kermit completely differently than I do because it's performed by a different person. And now, other people might say, well, it's not significantly different, and maybe they're right. But to me, it was significantly different.
Well, you know who agrees with you.
Brian Henson.
Apparently. I'm confused. Well, I'm not confused right now. I was confused earlier when this all came to light. For those of you who don't know, Steve, what's his last name?
I don't even know.
Guy named Steve has basically voiced Kermit since Henson died.
I mean, someone else did it for a while before him,
yeah.
or as well as him. I think Brian did for a while even.
Well, and but that's my thing.
For the most part, it's been this guy, and I've just never liked what he's done with it.
Until like 2 weeks ago, I would have told you that Brian Henson is the voice of Kermit.
Oh, okay.
Ever since Jim Henson was. But that's not true. It was mostly this guy.
I think Brian did do it sometimes, but I don't think he did it exclusively.
Well, and also, am I getting confused? Didn't he do the voice of Robin for a little while?
Brian? He might have. I don't know.
There was some weird connection involving frogs and Hensons.
But anyway,
we have so many good titles for this episode.
This guy is the guy who's done it. I forget his name.
Sing of White Men.
Because I never really liked him. But now he's been fired. That's the news.
Yes.
And then Brian Henson came out and said, you know, I should have done this 20 years ago because I've never liked this
guy. Never thought he did it. Well, okay. Here are both sides. Me and I know anything. The voice actor's side, the puppeteer's side, he is under the impression that basically he considers Kermit to be a very special, unique thing that Jim created, and he hates, especially since Disney bought him out, the attempt to sort of commercialize and take away from what is Kermit. And that he was very assertive in his notes to that effect, and Disney didn't like it, so now he's gone.
That's his story.
That's his version.
That's right.
The other side, which is a combination of some stuff Brian said and some stuff Disney said and things like that, is that Steve has always been really goddamn full of himself, like a serious diva about, like, I am Kermit.
Mm-hmm.
And to the degree that he was just incredibly demanding of stuff that was highly inappropriate and screwed up work because he was being such an ego about it. And on top of this, Brian is now saying, which I don't know, you want to love, if we want to love Brian Henson, say of course he's telling the truth. Maybe he's not telling the truth. Either way, right now is a terrible time to be bringing this up, I think.
For Brian Henson to be bringing
it
up? Yes. Oh, there's no doubt about that. I don't know if he's telling the truth or not. I don't care.
But he is saying that really he feels like Steve has never captured the essence and that there was a major shift in the tone and personality of Kermit after Brian died that had a lot to do with Kermit being way more three-dimensional before.
After Jim died.
And being an actual, like, I don't want to say a person, but much more human as opposed to the sort of squeaky, boring Boy Scout that he is now.
Well, okay. Speaking to whether or not Brian Henson should even have said any of this. I don't think it makes Brian Henson look very good.
No.
To say such things.
No, no, no.
Although...
Especially right now.
As someone who basically agrees with his sentiments, it's hard, you know...
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad I do know that he thinks that. But you're right, it's probably not appropriate for him to say those things, like you said, especially
now.
Well,
and it's the whole, like, if you believed it, why... So you've just been spending 20 years grinding your teeth? You're Brian goddamn Henson.
Yeah, why didn't you get rid of him? But anyway...
And by coincidence, he really loves the guy who's going to replace him.
Here's the thing about all of that. I don't feel like Kermit has had a distinctive voice since Jim died. But, like, this guy wants to claim, I'm sure, he thinks it's true, that he has stayed true to something that Jim did, or, you know, that he's been, this trust has been passed to him and that he has cherished it and whatever. I think the exact opposite's true. I think, and perhaps he's done it in over-caution about the character, I don't think Kermit has been anything. He's been completely two-dimensional. I wouldn't call him a boy... I wouldn't even go so far as to say he's a Boy Scout or any type of character. He's nothing. He
I
hasn't
like
been anything.
I feel like it was the exact opposite of what he said. Like, Jim Henson specifically wouldn't have wanted him to do the voice, but, like, through some nefarious plans, it's called Duggery, he made it so that he was bequeathed.
Oh, I guess I didn't
voice.
Hear that part. Yeah. I thought.
No. I'm just. You said he thinks that he's been keeping alive the spirit of Jim, and you said I think the exact opposite. And I'm like, the exact opposite would have to be like where Jim is like nobody, anybody
no,
but Steven,
no, no, no,
but
mean,
he very secretly switched the cards.
I think
or
the
shit.
Exact opposite. What I mean.
I'm making a joke.
Okay.
I'm making a joke about just switching around everything, kind of like Bizarro Superman. And so the exact opposite wouldn't just be that he failed to do that, but that he was specifically supposed to be avoided because he would be terrible at that, but then he secretly switched out wills or something.
That's actually a good story, though.
Absolutely.
That's a much better story. Let's go
and
with
it
that.
It should be human. The human people are puppets. Being puppeteered by giant frogs and pigs and things.
But I just have never really liked Kermit.
I keep wanting to say Steve Winwood. It's Steve W. something.
So for me, the fact that this guy's not going to do it anymore is great, because I never liked him to begin with. But they're just going to replace him with someone else I'm not going to like, so it doesn't
Matt
really matter.
Matt Stoat, I want to say.
There's no one they can replace him with that's going to make me happy.
Brian thinks this guy's way better.
Well, I'm sure he is, but that's not... To me, that's
I'm
the,
not sure
that's beside the whole point. Jim Henson died... Nobody's going to do this characters like he did, so just do something else. I mean, we didn't need to have
and
Kermit
I'm like,
keep going
the
on.
The dude
and on and
who
on.
Voiced Kermit isn't the one who decided to make Muppet Treasure Island,
right?
And that shitty ABC show. So I'm
right.
No, Muppets are already fucked.
No, that's what I say. That's what I say. But
well, which then become makes the whole thing super moot.
Yeah.
Like, this guy, other guy, I don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of us can do a Kermit the Frog impression at this point. I mean, come on.
But, I mean...
It's kind of like, I don't know, again, Futurama, which I was watching just a couple hours ago. Richard Nixon's on there. But it's clearly the Rich Little impression of Richard Nixon. And I don't know if it's Rich Little doing the voice. He's dead now, isn't he? Is Rich Little dead?
I don't know.
Somebody asked Abe Vigoda. Is Rich Little dead... George Peppard will know.
Too
you check with him.
Too soon.
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty sure.
Do you know when it was?
No, I don't know.
But it's that same thing again. It's a known... Kermit the Frog, Marlon Brando, Jack Nicholson, Peter Lorre. Everybody does an impression of them, and we're getting to the point where you don't even recognize that it's an impression of them. So... If you're going to keep doing Kermit, it can kind of be anybody.
Except
we all can do a Kermit now.
But see, here's another thing. As someone who's been a puppeteer, I think of puppeteering in a different way than other people might think differently.
I'm flailing my arms over here.
No,
but
trying to understand what I'm saying.
Is it like a conjoined twin thing?
When you perform a puppet... You
the proper verb.
You are acting, right? You are giving that character life. Just because nobody can see you doesn't mean you're not doing something.
No, absolutely.
And so it almost implies that, like just like you said, as long as someone can sound adequately enough like Kermit, they can play him. But that's like To me, that's like saying...
It's recasting. It's like if you had... It's like having a new Darren on Bewitched.
It is like that. Except Darren was created by writers and producers and directors, and then this guy was cast. For most times, if you're puppeteering, and this is especially the case in Jim Henson's situation, it's closer to is if one of the Smothers brothers died and they cast some guy to play the dead Smothers brother or something. Yes, think how bizarre that would be. Nobody would ever
do like
that.
Assuming it was Tommy, and I feel like it is Tommy. Seth Rogen?
Okay. And then everyone just pretends that that's Tommy. Calls him that, acts like it is.
Wait.
Now, wouldn't that be bizarre? Nobody would do that. Nobody would even think to do that.
It would be a pretty standard Seth Rogen vehicle, in my opinion. But it might not work. I am not sure that he can do the
maybe
yo-yo.
That's a bad example, but what I'm saying is...
No, it's a perfect example. It was just really ripe for that bit, so I had to run with it. No, I think it makes perfect sense, and I think that's a very good explanation.
You don't... Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
Rogan and Martin's laughing! Seriously, there are like 8 great episode titles in this. I still don't know what we're going to call the last one yet. I haven't decided that.
Maybe we were talking about this too long.
We have so many good episode titles. All right, we should probably draw some hatness. The new hatness.
Coffee wants to know.
What does Coffee want to know?
What do you value most in a relationship?
What is best in life?
Value most in a relationship?
Ooh.
You know, at first I was thinking I don't think there's a particular thing, but I think there probably is.
There is for me. What's interesting is that I don't think it has always been the case. But then I'm trying to think of what it was before.
I think for me it's probably always been, there has been one particular thing that is more important than anything else.
What's that?
Trust.
That's mine.
But being trusted. Actually, more than trusting.
I like both. Because, well, I've talked about this before. I trust Trish completely as a conscious choice.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to say you can't pick what you believe, which is true. You can pick your trust. And that's why, because you are the person I trust also. And I was like, oh, do I really trust them more? And we've talked about this. If it was a situation where you're standing on one side of me and Trish is standing on the other side of me, and the world's about to end, and you both have very distinctive plans of how to do it, and they conflict with each other, and I have to pick one, and for some reason you've left it up to me, because what? But you have. The answer is, I will go with Trish, but I will be pretty sure you're right.
Well,
because I'm choosing to trust her in everything. I just trust her in things. I mean, I trust her in things that she thinks she's trustworthy on. I don't trust her to get us to work on time. I handle that. But I mean, she'd agree to that. But there's nothing where she's like, trust me, or there's like, you trust that I'm not cheating on you, or like, all that I trust because I choose to. If she breaks that trust, then I'll learn the lesson. But I love that, and I feel like, I mean, I can't say that it's in the same degree. But she trusts me more than probably anybody else, and I can tell that, and that is very cool.
Yeah, I'd say my wife trusts me more than, I mean, nobody has ever trusted me more than she does.
I definitely am not even in the running.
There might be people who trust me.
Wait, I just talked about how I trust you almost as much as my
you
wife,
trust
so
me.
That joke doesn't work. Damn it,
you
I
trust
do.
Me.
Ah, damn it.
But nobody's trusted me more. Maybe about the same. Certainly not anyone I've been with in an amorous situation have trusted me as much as she does, for sure. They claim to, but it's pretty clear they didn't.
And I mean, I get...
I guess, like, I feel like I give the trust I want. So I do trust people as much as I would like them to trust me, and I want them to trust me a lot. I want to be a very trustworthy person.
I try and do that. I try and be trustworthy. And there's a lot of things where, like, I go to, not even the library, like I'm in a meeting at work or something, and I get there early, and I put my phone at the spot I'm going to sit in the meeting room, and then I go to the bathroom, and I leave my phone there, And could somebody steal it? Yes. If they did, is there much I could do about it? No. If that happened to me a couple times in the same area, I might start to worry. But I'm like, I am choosing not to live in that world.
Mm-hmm.
Now. And I mean, and I have the luxury to do that, mm-hmm, because my life's not over if somebody gets that phone. But well, there's a lot of things like that. It's like, oh, but you know, muggers or somebody. And I'm like, no, I don't feel like that's likely to happen. And I don't want to live in a world where I'm worrying about the 0.001% right, chance that I'm that person.
That's right.
Know?
That's right. Yep, I know exactly what you mean.
And I mean, that's just writ large, because are there things where I'm like, I don't think this is right, or I don't think this is going to work, or whatever, that she does? Yeah, absolutely. But I trust her. Like, I'm like, you got my trust. I don't know if that's going to work.
Well, I mean, and of course, trust in any relationship is, as you're kind of pointing out, is really not about whether or not something's going to work or be right or wrong. It's about, even if it doesn't work, or even if it is wrong, we'll still be together on this.
Yes.
We'll figure it out.
Well, but I feel like that's another component. That's a perspective issue.
Yeah.
Trish and I have talked about that a lot. Like, fights that we'll have now, we don't fight that much now, but when we do, very seldom is it a thing where afterwards you're, like, worried or anything.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's clearly not going to end our marriage. But no, I'm just, I do think there has to be that sort of feedback loop.
Yeah.
If I'm constantly trusting Trish and she's constantly letting me down in stuff that matters to me, probably. I mean, you do have to earn that trust, even as you're given that trust.
Yeah, no, so sure. And there's, you know, one
can lose trust.
Yeah, one of the things that I always thought was kind of helpful in about that whole Stephen Covey thing that we had at work all those years ago was this thing called the emotional bank account, because human beings, you know,
are not commodities.
No, human beings do have, there's a limit to how much a person can betray you.
Yep.
And how, I mean, you can even, there's a limit past which you can still forgive them and not hate them, but you might not really trust them anymore.
Yeah.
Or be able to live in the same house as them or whatever else.
Yeah,
you don't have any ill will toward them. You can maybe even be friends, but there's a certain level of trust that you're never going to achieve again, or it would take a lot of work to achieve again. And so you probably had better live apart and maybe,
well,
you know.
And yeah, and it's there's a trust of intention.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus like if once a week for like a month, every week Trish got us into a car wreck, do I still trust that she would never want to hurt me? Yes. Do I trust in her ability to drive? Maybe not.
No. Well. But yeah,
and that's the thing. And if the issues are things that involve cores of your relationship,
yeah,
I trust you not to lie to me. I trust you to pay your portion of the bills so the lights don't turn off.
Yeah, yeah.
I trust you to, you know, things like this.
But I mean, every once in a while, though, you run into a person who will always promise you that they're going to do something, and they have no intention to do it. And you just have to learn in those situations, okay, That's the kind of person this person is.
And if you don't learn, you elect them president.
Yeah, I guess.
It sounds like a cheap shot, but I believe that exact thing to such an intense degree.
But, you know, I've been in those situations a few times where I've realized, oh, I see, this person is saying they feel a certain way or going to do a certain thing, and they're never, even as they're saying it to me right now, they don't really mean it. They just want me to shut up. They just want the argument to end.
It's not always a lie. Sometimes it's just zero follow through. I totally intended to do this. Because, I mean, I find this with myself a lot. I'll promise myself, tomorrow morning you're going to go to the gym. I often will then not go to the gym. I mean, until I've instituted this new thing,
sure,
which makes me. But sometimes people are genuinely like, no, I'm going to do this for you. But they won't, because they're really flaky about that kind of shit. And then there's other times where they're like, I'm really going to do this for you. And they already know, like, I'm never doing this for you. I'm just
lying. Well, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, there comes a point where you realize the only reason this person promises you something is to get past whatever.
To shut you up.
Yeah, to shut you up. To get past this argument, or to get the thing from you they want. And then as soon as they get it from you, they're going to go and not do the thing. Or maybe do the exact opposite of the thing they said they were going to do. And, you know, typically these people are addictive personalities, and or they're straight up addicts and on something, some substance or whatever. And you just have to, you know, maybe you don't hate the people, you don't want to be angry with that person, but you can't really have anything to do with them anymore. And that's, I've been in that situation a couple times, and I hate it, because I don't want anyone to ever give up on me. So the last thing I want to do is give up on somebody. But at the same time, if you're in a relationship with someone like that, they're taking all of your resources away from all the other people you care about. Mm-hmm. So even for on their behalf, even if you can't do it for yourself, for everybody else that you care about and want to care about and want to be there for, you've got to say, look, I can't keep having this type of relationship with you, and it's got to end.
Folks, I don't know what else you thought was going to happen here, but I'm going to say it now. Every week, every Thursday, William comes in the door. I haven't started recording yet, and I say, so you're going to cook me dinner after this, right? And he says, yeah,
I say, sure.
I promise.
And then he says, I'm not going to start this podcast until you promise. And I say, I promise.
Every time we stop, he just immediately leaves.
And then he starts the podcast, and I bolt. Just
as soon as the podcast is over, he just leaves every week. And I don't know that I can continue this. Because...
Sucker.
I don't know how to make food. So I only get dinner 6 nights a week.
And look at me laughing about it, because I think it's so awesome that I'm totally using this person.
Why do we always fall for the bad?
That's good. Good one.
As soon as whatever's over, they'll just walk out, and I was like, oh. No, I don't think we have time for
another. Oh, we don't have time for another one? We're done already?
Yeah, well, we are done already. It's on the rough side, but I don't.
Okay.
I got shit to do. I had to put, before you showed up, I essentially packed all my clothes for the trip, but they were all dirty. I just got them together, exactly what I was going to take, and put it in one load of laundry and washed it. And then once we finish recording, I can dry it.
Mm.
So that tomorrow night, I can just pack instead of washing, drying, and packing, which is what Trish had to do, and was not a pretty sight. So, yeah, I have miles to go before I sleep, as they say. Yeah, everybody should go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us what you think, and tell us how much you trust us. Because I'm very curious, and I need to borrow some money. But I'll cook you dinner. Now I feel like I've turned it into something dirty. It feels weird now. Because like in an old 50s movie, that was the hot dame, was the one that would come back to your place and cook you some steaks before she'd sleep with you, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about
that. From the few 1950s movies I saw with people from the wrong side of the tracks, I feel like. Except it never actually happened. Every time a woman offered to do that, man would be super into it, and she would murder him or something.
Oh, okay.
It's always a trick. But anyway, so, I'll cook you dinner. I promise. I promise. That's that 70s show joke there. Deep cut. Also, write that, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We survive on emails like you. It's like PBS with money, but for us it's emails, mm-hmm. So do that. Also, I got a notification on Facebook the other day.
That someone liked us on Facebook?
No.
Oh.
Not that.
Okay. That someone unliked us on Facebook? Do they tell you that kind of thing?
No, but you're freakishly close.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Facebook just told me, haven't had any new likes in a really long time. Maybe you should spruce the place up
put on
some makeup, you know, nice clothes.
Cook up some steaks.
Exactly. I was like, what the f-? And I immediately get it. I immediately am like, they want to keep me active and doing shit and all this, because that's how the empire works. But I'm like, seriously? Am I getting negged by Facebook? I'm like, you don't have a lot of likes there. Maybe if you cleaned yourself up a bit. Seriously? That's fucked up. So, help me not have that happen again. I know we're feeding into the system, but I don't care. like the hat. I did find out. So I'm like the last person to like the hat. No idea who they are. Like, it wasn't a name I recognized. It was not a profile picture. It's not somebody I'm friends with. No idea who it is. I wonder if they actually listen, or they just like and stuff. If you listen, if you are the last person, go to Facebook, go to that page, see who the last person to like it was. If that's you, write us, let us know, or go to the blog, magicaltalkinghead.com, and tell us that it's you. That would be weird, but in a cool way. So do that. And the rest of you, I don't know.
I don't know. Well, if you don't know, I don't know.
I was going to say, come to terms with your fear of black people.
Okay.
But that was last episode, I think. Can that be something we put in the title? I don't know what I don't know what that title is going to be. This one is Appletoons.
Oh, okay, Appletoons.
I don't know what the other one is.
I don't either.
But, do that. Also, yeah, seriously, look up Liz Phair. L-I-Z, and then Phair is spelled P-H-A-I-R. And if you go back to her really old stuff from, like, the early to mid-90s, but especially Exiled in Guyville, awesome, angry, feminist singer-songwriter. So it's like, she sounds like a strung-out Ani DiFranco. It's just awesome. I feel like people would think that as an insult, but yeah, no, it's good. I keep wanting to do comparisons to Tom Waits, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's just because I mentioned Tom Waits earlier.
Probably.
So... have a good time. Don't think about me hanging out on the beach, because that'll just make you sad, because you're not hanging out on the beach. We love you guys. Don't be scared of black people.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.